From the nautical mile of your heart, it's Dave's Gone By on AM 1240 WGBB Freeport, one of the oldest stations in the country. And it looks it.
There goes the Daverhood!
We got David Lefkowitz here. He's a Long Island arts guy. He's got his own radio show.
Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Tropical hot dog night! Like two flamingos in a fruit fight! Every color of day, twirling around at night.
Well, there goes the Daverhood. Welcome, everyone, on this Sunday night, this bitter and kind of frozen and icy, and at least it's not rainy or snowy, but it's all there on the ground to be slipped on. It's real dangerous out there. But it's all nice and cozy in here at WGBB on this Sunday night, January 11th, 2009, as we embark upon the 302nd episode of Dave's Gone By, the very model of a modern major episode, ladies and gentlemen. And I'll explain what that means as we get ready here to do this program that we've been doing here since October of 2002. And I'm Dave Lefkowitz, radio personality, journalist, humorist, and someone who just loves doing what I'm doing, and that's why I'm still bothering to do it. So we're here, and I'm not alone, by the way. I do have in the studio with me our usual guest co-host. His name is Jeff Goodman. Hello, Jeff.
Oh, you're alone. That's okay.
I'm spiritually alone no matter what I do. But so did you have a good weekend, Jeff?
Well, no, the Giants lost.
Oh, well, yeah, they lost this afternoon. They weren't really much in the game, offense-wise or particularly defense-wise either. It was just, they weren't meant to do it this year.
They were just very offensive.
Hey, look, Jets fans suffered that a week ago, so we know where you're at.
No, that was 2 weeks ago.
Two weeks ago already. Whatever. It feels like 100 years. It feels like 100 years until baseball season starts again, and I don't even want to root for the Mets, so I don't even know what the hell I'm going to do. But I know what we're going to do tonight. First of all, we're going to thank our sponsors, the sponsors of Dave's Gone By, that include Hewlett Minuteman Press, the Copy Kings of Broadway at 1315 Broadway in Hewlett, Long Island. 10% off for all jobs, big or small, at Hewlett Minuteman Press.
All jobs?
All. If you go in there for like 10 cents of Xeroxing, you'll get for 9 cents. But you know, if you have a big job, thousands and thousands of pages or things to be bound or holiday cards, you get 10% off that, but you got to mention Dave's Gone By at Hewlett Minuteman Press. Also, go to the delicious, the incredibly luscious and kosher. You don't hear those words together very often. Woodrow Delicatessen, located in the Peninsula Shopping Center of Hewlett, Long Island. Yeah.
And it's spelled W-O-O-D-R-O.
That's right. They leave off the last W.
For whatever.
Whatever wonderful pastrami. For the W in pastrami. That's why they leave it off. They're open 7 days a week, even though they are kosher. And I've been eating there. My family's been eating there for 30 years. And the food is still really, really great. At the Woodrow.
And there's no weight problem there.
No, there aren't. Well, no. I mean, yeah, we go there, I would say, almost once a week.
And that's no borscht.
Oh, now cut that out. But do tell us about Fancy Schmancy Balloons.
Oh, sure. If you're having a party and you need any decorating or just party planning needs, call 516-797-3229.
Have that number one more time.
516-797-3229.
For Fancy Schmancy Balloons, it's party decorating. It's not just balloons, folks. It's pretty centerpieces. And also, Jeff can put together all the elements of your party at Fancy Schmancy Balloons. And also, this program is brought to you by Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine.
I've heard of that. It's the Bible of Broadway.
For 66 years. It's where you find out everything that's going on the stages of New York. From Broadway to off-Broadway, cabaret, opera, dance, rumors of things that are coming up, go to PerformingArtsInsider.com.
It's a rumor mill?
PerformingArtsInsider.com. com. And well, it's like a gossip magazine, but if you want to know what's happening with shows that may be coming to Broadway in a year or two, that's the place to go. And Dave's Gone By listeners get a really great discount on annual subscriptions. PerformingArtsInsider.com.
Ooh.
And I also want to remind you, once again, that if you love this show or you're first finding out about this show and you want to hear more episodes and know more about it, all you got to do is go to the website davesgoneby.org, davesgoneby.org, because there are over 200 episodes now of the 300 that we've done that you can listen to anytime, day or night. You can stream them. You can either download them to your iPod or just stream them right on your computer. It's absolutely free at davesgoneby.org. Check out the archives, literally going back to 2004 at this point, and every show we have done since then. But let's talk about this particular show, the show that we are about to do.
Let's do that, Dave.
Which is going to include... It would probably be a rather verbal and fun show because our guest, first of all, our big guest, is Albert Bergeret. Do you know who that is?
I have no idea.
He is the founder and music director and artistic director of the New York Gilbert and Sullivan Players. Okay. They're basically the only place that you can see Gilbert and Sullivan done and performed in New York, unless someone like a Joseph Papp, who no longer lives, decides to mount Gilbert and Sullivan on Broadway. With, you know, it's unlikely now that Joseph Papp is dead that he would be doing that much anymore.
You would think.
And, you know, you don't see them at the Metropolitan Opera. You don't see them done at City Opera, even. So the filling that niche for people who do like Gilbert and Sullivan, and I think it's kind of nice to have that around.
It's always good to have your niche filled.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is indeed. And they do a very, very good job of it. They're musically, it's really, really a nice troupe. They do very well by them. So I thought it would be really fun to talk to Albert Bergeret about Gilbert and Sullivan and the founding of the whole troupe, and the fact that they've been doing this for quite a few years. So we'll be talking to him as well. We'll also be going inside Broadway. It's a rather theatrical episode of Dave's Gone By, because, a lot of stuff to talk about on Broadway. We're still in the doldrums, still a lot of things closing. But I also wanted to mention do a couple of reviews, because I saw this past week Pal Joey, and I thought it would be really worth talking about that. And got to see a show that closed, unfortunately, today, but I did want to give a shout-out to the Signature Theater's revival of the play Home, which is actually quite special. But speaking of theater and Broadway things, I wanted to thank Jeff Goodman and also our mutual friend Charles Gross for taking part last night in the fourth edition of the Stage Buggy live show that I've been doing at the Times Square Arts Center every Saturday night. Jeff, did you have a good time doing that?
Yeah, it was fun.
Jeff's rolling his... Why, what do you mean, yeah, it was fun, roll your eyes? You didn't enjoy it? What was the matter? I thought it was a darn good show.
No, it was a good show, but yeah. I got to say about five words.
Well, yeah, you didn't have that much time up there, and Charlie sort of, first of all, Charlie wanted to do a short scene from his one-man show, which was fine, which I wanted him to do. I mean, he did great. And... Yeah, he kind of answered the questions in lengthier fashion than you did, but you did get to talk about The Price is Right. I made sure of that. I made sure you got your Price is Right question. So.
Only because it's a very interesting fact about me.
And, you know,
it is?
Yeah. It's the only interesting thing. No, not true.
Okay. Well, I'm just going home and killing myself.
Yeah, we didn't really get to talk about the theater that much because first it was Price is Right and then his show, and we didn't.
Well, he brought out all these playbills for some reason, and
I thought he was probably going to do this thing where they do the playbill countdown. He'd just go through all these shows real quick and debate you about them. But by the time we got to that, and the show was running late, we'd already talked for a couple of minutes, and I had to move things on. But you did great. I mean, and you think... and by the way, my wife was in the audience yesterday, and she said she looked thinner. So,
oh, that's good.
Congratulations to you on that.
The dieting might be helping.
Well, I hope so. I mean, you've been... did you go to WW?
Yes, I did.
Good for you. Okay. You know, if I have to do it on the radio to bring it out and make sure that you're doing this, then
oh, that's
then
nice.
Good.
So we'll have the two or three listeners
who are starting to care. I mean, well, no, but it's nice that someone noticed on stage that you're looking a little better. I think that's good.
I hope so.
So
can't look much worse.
Now stop that. Well, This is not about looking. This is radio. So for listening purposes, you're perfectly fine. For people at home, you could be weighing 150 pounds, and then that's all they know.
Well,
about.
I only weigh 180.
Oh, do you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the other person who lives inside you, how much does he weigh? I'm sorry, that's terrible. That's not nice. Let's get to the nice
stuff. No, it's not.
Let's get to the fun stuff. Let's call Albert Bergeret and talk about Gilbert and Sullivan and all things musical. I'm so brain dead on a Sunday night that I can't do sort of that witty patter thing that they do.
Just on Sunday?
I deserve that one. So let's hear a couple of commercials, and then we'll be right back at you with some Gilbert and Sullivan and Bergeret. Dave's Gone By wants you to advertise on the show. Reach our loyal audience with your message at prices you can afford even in this economy. Call 516-295-1511, 295-1511, or visit davesgoneby.org for info. You'll want us just as much as we want you. What's black and white and red all over? Photocopies made at Hewlett Minuteman Press, the copy kings of Broadway. Any job that you have, including black and white copies, and they've got a brand new color copier, great quality, good prices, wonderful family that has owned Hewlett Minuteman Press since the 1970s. So check them out, 516-569-5577, Hewlett Minuteman Press. They're the kings. Here's a place you should know when your hunger does grow. Come visit the Woodrow. Have a little tongue, have a bowl of soup, have some lemon chicken and chopped liver by the scoop, brisket and pastrami, simmers and salami, catering and everything is kosher and it's yummy, turkey and knishes, deli so delicious. Everybody go to the Woodrow. Everybody go to the Woodrow. Woodrow Kosher Delicatessen, 5 decades serving fresh, delicious cold cuts and entrees. Open 7 days at the Peninsula Shopping Center in Hewlett. 516-791-4033. 791-4033. For lunch, dinner, catering, and private parties. The Woodrow. There's the place you should go.
I am the captain of the Pinafore.
And the right good captain, too.
You're very, very good. And be it understood, I command our right good crew.
We're very, very good, and be it understood, we command our right good crew.
We're related to a peer, I can hand, reef, and steer, or ship a sail for a G. I'm never known to quail at the fury of a gale, and I'm never, never sick at sea.
What, never?
No, never.
What, never?
No, hardly ever.
He's hardly ever sick at sea. They give three cheers and one cheer more for the captain of the Pinafore.
Yes, the captain of the Pinafore. That's Gilbert and Sullivan, of course, from the HMS Pinafore. Well, we've got the captain of the Gilbert and Sullivan Players, the guy who founded them, who thought of the whole idea, and who has been their music director and artistic director and their chief cook and bottle washer for all these years. His name is Albert Bergeret, and he's on the phone with us now. Albert, how are you doing?
I'm doing just fine.
That's great. Now, first, let's get out of the way the reason that we're having you on this particular week. You guys are busy doing kind of a little cabaret thing. So tell
That's
us
right,
about
and
that.
Actually, we're doing a little takeoff on the number we just heard there. We have a leader of the cabaret instead of the captain of the Pinafore in our show.
Oh, cute. Okay. And so what is it? It's at the Triad, right?
It's at the Triad on 72nd Street, Thursday night at 7 and Sunday afternoon at 5:30. We're having a great time doing something we call a little twist. I've got a little twist. Mm-hmm. Take off on the title, I've Got a Little List from the Mikado, where we're taking a little bit of a different look at Gilbert and Sullivan repertory and some musical theater pieces that we think relate in some way, either textually or musically, mm-hmm. and having a little fun with our respect for the material, but giving it a little twist. And every number has a little bit of a separate and unique perspective.
Well, you sometimes do that. I mean, you're very respectful to the material, and
absolutely. I mean, one of the things that we say in this cabaret act is that, look, we're not trying to take anything away from what we do with our full company. It's just a chance to do something a little different. We believe in the material as it was written, but we also believe that it's not meant to be museum-oriented, right. That it's not static, that performing art is something that has to communicate with an audience, and that it has to be kept fresh. Our mission statement says, giving vitality to the living legacy of Gilbert and Sullivan, which includes both the genre itself and those things that have followed it. It's it leaves it a little bit broad, but it also tells you something. We want to bring it, keep it fresh, alive, and communicative with a modern audience, even though we do the material as it was written with occasional twists. Sometimes
right.
A couple of lyrics are changed if we see in our full productions, but basically we're true to the original intent of the authors.
I've seen you do that just a little bit in some of the times of the actual shows that you've done.
Well,
not often. Like someone will, there's playfulness, there's the occasional anachronism.
Exactly. We try to make it so that it communicates with the audience. If there's an obscure reference that the audience that's in the theater at the time will find confusing, we'd like to change that and take that confusion out of the equation. Sometimes it's not possible. Gilbert is very clever with his lyrics, and sometimes it's more topical than others. But many times, particularly in the Mikado, where there are lists of potential victims for Coco, the Lord High Executioner, or lists of Pooh Bah, the Lord High Everything Else, with lists of his offices, or the Mikado's lists of punishments to fit the crime, those references to 19th century institutions and things are sometimes just not really as understandable. So we like to update those and give them a little bit of a punch that makes them communicate with the audience. But the music...
Well, what are some examples recently of, like when you did Mikado or Pinafore, where you changed specific
Pinafore
lyric?
Doesn't have a lot, but I've got one that's beautiful.
Yeah.
In Pinafore, when it was first written, the telephone had just been invented. And there's a very somber moment close to the end of the show where four characters come forward in a minor key, sing in four-part harmony. He'll hear no tone of the maiden he loves so well, no telephone communicates with his cell. Well, at that point, that would have been a very humorous reference, but it's done so somberly and seriously, most audiences now would just think, we change one word, no cellular phone communicates with his cell, and all of a sudden it's back to what was originally intended. It's a commentary on some part of contemporary life that doesn't make sense, or that makes a twist on what the words themselves say. That's the one time in there's very little else in Pinafore that really needs to find that. That's an opportunity that presents itself. It's not like we're going out trying to find places to change the original works, because we think they really do play in their intent. It's just when there is an opportunity that presents itself, we do not shy away from taking advantage of it.
I'm curious of some of the names that you transposed in Mikado.
In Mikado, well, there's something new every day. Each performer comes up with their own. When Coco has a list of victims, whether it's the current governor's scandal or the current campaign that's being political. I mean, this material, one of the things that's unique about Gilbert Sullivan is not just romances. It's the political satire and the satire on human nature and institutions that tend to be repeated from one generation to another. You don't have to know, for instance, in HMS Pinafore that W.H. Smith, the founder of W.H. Smith Bookstores, the British equivalent of Barnes & Noble, was the man who was made the first Lord of the Admiralty by Queen Victoria and the British Parliament, and it was something of a joke that he knew nothing about the Navy he actually thought it was a great joke himself. He called himself Pinafore Smith for the rest of his life. But you don't have to know that to appreciate that Sir Joseph is this stuffed shirt the character you love to hate, the character who goes around professing, his superiority because he knows nothing about the Navy, and therefore that makes him the ruler of the Queen's Navy, and stick close to your desks and never go to sea, and you all may be rulers of the Queen's Navy. The humor still rings true, even if you don't know the historical background.
Well, I mean, we've had a president for the past 8 years who doesn't know anything about being president. So it still kind of rings true right there. Yeah.
I would imagine that W has been in a few of our satirical comments along the way, absolutely.
Now, you've been doing this since 1974.
That's right. We're 35 years old.
Good Lord. How did you get start?
I started out with a bunch of friends from Barnard College and some opera workshops and church choirs where I sang. But Barnard G&S was really the impetus for it. A friend of mine from Barnard College, Gilbert and Sullivan, our student at Columbia, did some 20 shows over 10 years with the Barnard College, Gilbert and Sullivan Society, which in those days had a lot of alumni participation as well as undergraduate participation, and was all student-run and did not take money from the Student Activities Association. And it was sort of a little microcosm, how to run a business on a college campus basis. And I learned an awful lot about the material and about running a company from doing that and being part of it. I started in the chorus and worked my way up to leads and directing and designing and business managing and all sorts of things. So I got a handle on it. And then when a friend said, some of us really ought to get out of the way of the undergraduates and move on, I said, well, I'm interested, but I'm not interested in community theater. I'd like to try to form something that has a professional basis. And even though we had no money, I'm fond of saying that our our first season was a budget of $35, and everything else was begged, borrowed, and stolen. To get us out there on the street, I think we spent $35 on Xeroxing flyers that summer. That was about it. Everything else was borrowed, and we got out and started doing the Mikado in the back of a Winger wagon at block parties around the city. It started with that, and last year we reached over $2 million in our annual budget. So
nice.
We've gone somewhere in the time and figured that we've raised $5 million from individuals in the last... $1 million in individuals in the last 5 years. That was our most recent milestone. But we also earn a lot of money from both ticket sales and from traveling around the country and performing. We get performance fees for all sorts of things, full performances. We also have a group called the Wandering Minstrels, which is a quintet, usually a quintet, but sometimes fewer, which can perform in libraries. We've been there on Long Island performing in libraries on numerous occasions, and over at Hofstra. And we do programs as well as our full company with smaller ensembles where the budget size is appropriate and where it's appropriate to do a less formal, fully staged production.
Do they do bar mitzvahs and weddings?
Absolutely. I can't say that a bar mitzvah has much relevance, but weddings definitely. And we've done funerals too, actually.
Wait a minute. No, come on. What do you do at a funeral?
I have a song to sing, a very melancholy song from The Yeoman of the Guard, which is a foreshadowing of a character's death.
Yeah,
and I've sung it at memorial services where somebody says this was this person's favorite song. That was done. I remember doing that in a memorial chapel, Jewish memorial chapel once. Another time, I had been hired by a daughter to sing a version of the When I Was a Lad song we were just referring to from Sir Joseph for a party celebrating the publishing of her father's. Lifelong work in pathology,
cool.
As it turned out.
Yeah.
And then when he passed away a year or so later, she asked me to come back and sing it at the memorial service.
That's a nice little sideline. Yeah, I didn't realize that you sang, because when I see the
I perform with the smaller ensemble, I frequently sing as well. I've done both tenor leads and comic lead pieces of things. I sometimes do a two-person show with a soprano. I've done lecture demos by myself.
Would you favor us? I wasn't expecting this, but since you can and do, could we get a little snippet of something? A little acapella?
I sort of did that already. I did, stick close to your desks and never go to sea, and you all may be rulers of the Queen's Navy. Tell me if I'm going too fast for the radio. I mean,
no,
for going very fast. If people say
no, those radio waves
fast, I do Gilbert and Sullivan for a living. Like, how could I not?
Well, there may also be dead people listening, so for their memorial, you might want to give us a little of that sad Gilman song.
I have a song to sing, oh, sing me your song, oh. It is sung to the moon by a lovelorn loon who fled from the mocking throng, oh. The song of a merry man, moping mum, whose soul was sad and whose glance was glum, who sipped no sup and who craved no crumb as he sighed for the love of a lady.
That's nice.
Enough of that.
Yeah, no, that's actually rather nice.
On a totally different subject, I want you to know one of my really best friends used to have two dogs, one named Gilbert, one named Sullivan.
Uh-huh.
And Sullivan passed away, but Gilbert's still around, and she adopted another dog, and now she has Mabel.
Uh-huh. Sullivan and Mabel.
Mabel.
Mac and Mabel?
The one who's still around is Frederick.
Wait, who's Frederick? I'm sorry?
Oh, Frederick,
yes. Frederick
in
the Pirates of Penzance. He only has a birthday once every 5 years.
Right.
So technically, he turned 21 in 1940, so he's still not of an age where he should be dead unless you want to count the real years.
It's only every four years.
He was
born on the 29th of February.
On the 29th of February, and you have to skip a few to count it, right, because the turn of the century doesn't have a leap year.
That's right.
So
now, let me ask you, how many people, have you ever met people who have dogs named for Gilbert and Sullivan?
I have a major contributor who lives in Colorado who has Iolanthe and Ruttigore 1, 2, and 3.
Ruttigore 2. And I just like the idea of Ruttigore 2 right there.
And they make contributions with those names for listening in the program.
If they give you money, they can name their damn dogs anything they want to. That's how I feel. You know.
But
all the way from Colorado to see us. I saw them Thursday night at the cabaret opening.
Excellent.
Yeah, that is cool.
So there are a lot of people out there who do that. I think it's just so clever. I would love to have a dog.
I'm just happy that you guys have like $1 million in contributions and stuff in this economy.
Well, that was over 5 years. We have been primarily an earned income operation for many, many years, of which I'm fairly proud in some respects that we have generated the majority of the money from this company, and it's a not-for-profit corporation.
How about
from ticket sales and fees for services, which is what I'd rather do than ask for contributions. But in the world of not-for-profit theater and in the modern age, contributions are absolutely necessary to sustain our operation.
How about New York State and the federal government?
How shall I put it? The New York State Council gives us the same amount of money now or less than when we were at one-tenth of the budget.
Oh, okay.
So they give us you know, a token every year.
Uh-huh.
It's a small amount, but it's really appreciated and it's helpful. The National Endowment turns us down every year.
Really?
Why do you think? Are you a not-for-profit?
Absolutely.
So why do you think?
And they once or twice have given us the minimum grant, but for 10 years or so, we have not received anything from the National Endowment. We're not American. We're not community. We're in New York.
Wait a minute.
We're not
I'm
Grand
sorry.
Opera. We're not... There's a certain sense that we're neither we don't have the sophistication of the classical music world, and we don't have the contemporary values of the theater world, and we're not American, so we don't qualify as being American in a sense.
Because Gilbert and Sullivan are not
it's British.
American.
It's British. It's considered English, so it falls into crack.
Are you from where? Are you Canadian? Where are you from?
No, I'm a New Yorker. My father was a Frenchman.
No, they're saying the product.
The product.
Yeah.
The material itself is considered. It falls into crack between considerations. The theater people who come to see it think of it. Oh, that's that old hat stuff that doesn't really deserve to get the attention of our budget.
Oh,
so
that's
it
such
gets
a
sort
shame.
Of shunted aside on that. And on the other side, it's not considered grand enough and to be classic. It is, but.
Huh.
Some people don't see it that way. I mean, one of my associates was brought up in prep school where the headmaster said children should be introduced to three things: the Bible, Shakespeare, and Gilbert and Sullivan. And we kind of feel that way about it. We think that it's a great way for kids to get interested in classical music and to listen to real, legitimate singing. And at the same time, it's accessible to them. They understand it on one level. Maybe not catching all of the verbal sophistication, but it's a way to get language that they have to listen to in a different way than, hey, yo, man, what's up, you know? And
it's Gilbert X.
And kids react, they respond positively to the caricatures on human nature that are intrinsic to these works. It's something that doesn't exist in any other genre, on musical theater, opera. It's a really ingenious mix of this satire on the way people work. And one of the things I think somewhat unintentionally, Mr. Gilbert, they were both very much a product of a society, the Victorian society, that they were lampooning, but they really didn't want to give offense. So they went to great lengths to make sure that all of the barbs were not drawing blood. And therefore, the people who they were poking fun at could laugh at themselves. It's a little bit like some of the late night shows that do jokes on people who then,
yeah.
You know, they bring John McCain on the show after they've been poking fun at him for the last month or whatever and, you know, have fun with him, and he laughs at that same jokes with them. There's that, but our sensibilities are much edgier these days. Because Gilbert was making his barbs less specific, less bloodthirsty, they become couched in terms that are generic and terms that therefore transcend the politics of the day and become political, but yet not specifically rooted in any particular time. I find that that's a kind of a unique value that these works have that I don't think anybody else has ever replicated.
Yeah, that's very true.
Well, because I'm thinking when you mentioned that, like maybe the David Fry records in the 1970s where he's lampooning Nixon. And they're amusing, but they're basically forgotten because
it was
Nixon, you know.
I mentioned that there was a great, great cabaret act called McBird. I mean, it
right,
was about
right.
Lady Bird and the Johnsons and everything. But, you know, 5 years later, it didn't have any punch at all. It's
right.
Totally unmemorable.
Rooted in its time. By the way, I'm kind of wondering, do you have a favorite Gilbert and Sullivan operetta, and which one it would be?
Well, I was taught by John Reed, the great star of the Dolly Cart for over 25 years, who was our guest artist for 6 years, that anytime anybody asked him what his favorite was, it was the one that he was performing that night. which to some extent is true for me, too. I love them all on different ways, but I will profess a personal favorite, Iolanthe.
Really?
That was the prettiest music, I think. That was the first operetta of theirs that I saw you guys do.
Well,
it was the first time I went to Nygasp, and I thought it was lovely.
And well, the music is fine, and I love the March of the Piers is perhaps the best chorus ever written for men. And there are other things that are just wonderful about the score. But the thing that I think in particular attracts me to it is the character of the Lord Chancellor, who gets to be both the silly comic character with wisecracking remarks and witty witticisms, and also gets the moment where the wife that he hasn't seen for 25 years, who he thought was dead, shows up in front of him, and he really still loves her, and he says, "I, Lancy, thou livest." And you can't get a more dramatic, real moment. And the fact that that character gets to play the father, he has this fatherly attitude. There's a really well-drawn character there. And in the terms of an allegory that one of our guest artists, a fellow named John Astin, who might sound familiar, you know, as in Gomez.
Yeah, I saw him do...
Okay, John Astin, Patty Duke Astin, whatever. Yeah. John was our guest star one year. He did Pinafore with us.
Right.
And he had come to see our production of Iolanthe that season just before he started working with us. And he pointed out to me, and it's something that's sort of self-evident, but here you have a wonderful allegory for the human condition again. The women, the fairies representing immortality, intellectuality, and what everybody desires to be ideally in their mind. And the peers representing the stupidity and the mundanity and the rootedness of your body and of human existence in reality. And then you have a character who's literally half of each. And Strephon is the everyman who is half a fairy and half a mortal. And he's stuck with literally, you know, his upper half is one or his lower half is the other. So it becomes this sort of, you know, a kind of an oversimplified, but this allegory for the human condition. The intellectual part that wants to be immortal that goes on, and the body that's stuck kicking behind.
Who are some of the other guest stars that you've worked on? I know Hal Linden.
Yeah, Hal Linden was our most recent. Before that, we had Frank Gorshin, we had Pat Carroll, and perhaps most illustriously, Steve Allen.
What did Steve Allen do?
Steve Allen did a title role on the Mikado with us, which he couldn't remember. Couldn't remember. He had little post-its all over the stage.
Wow.
And in the dialogue, not to speak ill of the dead, but I think, you know, he knew at the time, too, that he was having trouble. He wanted to rewrite all the lyrics, and we were fine with that, except that then once he'd rewritten, we couldn't remember what they were. So we had people on stage saying, "Hey, boss, tell him about the execution." You know, it's like they had to tell him what the topic was next.
Oh,
he
boy.
He was still very funny, but it was
excruciatingly
difficult to get through a performance with the guy.
Oh, man. I sort of wish I'd seen that.
That would have been great. And I also like Pat Carroll.
Pat Carroll
was
marvelous as a little buttercup. She sang it as a baritone. She had a tendency to forget stuff, but didn't really learn the score properly.
No, but she'd be an ideal buttercup. I can see her.
She sang it an octave low. She sang it as a baritone.
Okay. Yeah, but I mean, just the fact of her, and there's no more stolid human female. No offense.
Pleasing person with a good accent. Yeah, she was great.
So,
who do you have coming up?
Well, right now we're sort of on a hiatus from our full productions.
Oh.
Because of financial problems. That's why we're doing a low-risk, low-yield in a cabaret act, which, by the way, again, is this Thursday and Sunday. I've got a little twist, which we are
at the Triad,
a great
theater,
deal of fun with the Triad on 72nd Street just east of Broadway.
It's a great, the Triad is a great theater.
Great little place, beautiful little almost proscenium, but with just six people who fill it from side to side.
If people don't know, that's where Forbidden Broadway started.
That's where they started.
Remember Plaid was there for a while? Yeah.
Tons of stuff.
Bill Boggs is still there.
Oh, he's doing his thing out there, Bill Boggs.
Bill Boggs is still, he was doing his show after us tonight, in fact.
Well, very neat.
Yep.
But
we don't have any guest artists lined up.
And
in fact, guest artists are a problem for us because they have a lot of trouble keeping up with our knowledge of the material.
But did they bring in the crowds? Does it help?
It has helped in some ways, and in other ways it hasn't. It's been disappointing at other times, very disappointing.
Hmm.
You know, Steve Allen managed to mention that he was doing the Mikado in New York and never mentioned the name of the company and the various publicity things that he was able to find.
Well, he forgot.
Just forgot.
At least
he
remembered New York.
Or didn't want to mention it, whatever, for one reason.
Who would be your ideal guest?
I've been after Dick Van Dyke, but Dick Van Dyke has gotten too old, and he realizes that he can't learn the stuff. There are various other people who have also come to that conclusion. I would love to have done it with we've got a reference to the Music Man in our our cabaret, talking about the legacy of Patter and how Music Man was a show by Meredith Wilson with Patter in it, and one of the people that I'd always wanted to work with back in the day would have been Robert Preston.
There are some
people I think you can just sort of sense from their personas that they'd be a delight to work with, And there were others who might be appropriate for the material, but who I would not have wanted to work with.
Well, look, Patti LuPone's available now.
Well, no, I don't think Patti would fit for GNS anyway. But Tony Randall was one of those. Who I would have loved. I had conversations with. Gilbert Sullivan's big opera fan. But in the long run, I don't know that he would have been.
He would have wanted to direct.
He wouldn't have wanted him. He wouldn't have been much fun to work with.
He could be prickly. He could. And I think we're waiting for the Mandy Patinkin pinafore.
Well, Mandy Patinkin is another one, actually. He's actually sort of a neighbor. His kids went to school around the corner here, and all kinds of connections with that. Yeah. But Mandy never was interested. He was interested in recording some of the songs. He put the Nightmare song from Iolanthe on his album, or one of his albums, anyway. Yeah. But I don't think he's ever been interested in actually playing one of the roles. He's very particular about what he wants to do.
So is it because of the financial thing, but even when you were in somewhat slightly better financial shape, when America was in better financial shape, you still sort of had to pull out either the Mikado or Pinafore.
We tend to pull out Pinafore, Pirates, and Mikado all the time in order to develop new audience. And it's a real problem for us. Obviously, there's a limited repertory, and the fact that only three of them seem to have real good legs with the general public who aren't already fans. Now, we pull out others, which we try to do on a more long-term rotating basis. But it's a constant problem about having overexposed the three titles that we do, that we know we can use to generate interest, that are household words, if you will. When we go on tour, there's virtually nobody who wants to book anything other than Pinafore, Pirates, or Mikado.
I mean, not that that's bad, but you understand that puts you in something of an artistic box.
It's part of the great debate that's going on for us right now as to what our future is, whether we need to. This cabaret act shows that we have some skills and some people who are pretty good at creating some new lyrics and new situations and past pages and putting something together. We've been talking for years about trying to create some sort of a piece that we could copyright that would be our own, that would be unique and different, but still be related to Gilbert and Sullivan. I just was thinking about that today again, thinking maybe this is the team that we're working with now that could do that for us. Although we have a connection to Rupert Holmes, whose brother sings with us. And I know Rupert, and I've been bugging him for about a year or two now to sit down and talk to me about another idea that he has. And it's just that he's just too damn busy, and we just haven't been able to get together on it. But
Or maybe Joe DiPietro. He tends to do pretty good jobs at shoehorning other people's songs into something else.
Yeah.
Well, that's just an idea.
But of course, our primary mission is still to do the works.
Sure.
And we might want to do something other than Gilbert and Sullivan as our main, in part of our main scene. We did Of the I Sing by the Gershwins at one point.
Oh, really?
And back in 1990, we did that at Symphony Space.
Would you dip into Victor Herbert, or is that pushing the...
I don't know. It depends. I don't know. Whether it's Deflator Mouse or...
Depends
the
what
Mary
Victor
Widow,
Herbert thinks about being dipped
Herbert,
into.
Or what it might be that would be... of interest. I think we could do any of those with the company that we have, but we are, in essence, a company still, and the Gilbert and Sullivan material is what our company is built to do.
And you're still there. I mean, I'm sorry that you're not doing a season, but I'm glad that you're still doing what you do.
We're doing our first performances in California ever. We've got a booking out in Los Angeles in May. We're back at the Wolf Trap for the 14th year in a row at the end of May. We have 2 weeks of touring in the Midwest. In between, we have school workshops. We have our annual school workshop in Syosset there on Long Island.
Oh, cool.
We have two more workshops that we've just booked in Tenafly, New Jersey. Those are school residencies. The one in Syosset is a residency also, where we actually go into the school district and...
Schools are the only places where arts... There's, schools in the education section are the only place where people can count on funding and money these days.
Well, it's true, but I don't want to see us become the company where the tail's wagging the dog either. We're still primarily performers, and one of the things that's refreshing about what we bring to the educational forum is that we are professional performers. We're not trained educators. So we bring to it a different perspective than the person who is trained in curriculum development.
Well, as I said, I'm just very glad that NIGASP, that's what
can
I have
you
to
tell
call
people NIGASP. What NIGASP is?
Well, that's New York Gilbert and Sullivan Players, although I must tell you that back in the early days, one of the first reviewers who said, NIGASP, New York, no, it's not an anti-smoking organization.
That's cute. All right, that's cute. All right. It makes people remember NIGASP.
It's not the greatest acronym, but at times we've thought about the fact that if we're going to do something other than Gilbert and Sullivan, at some point maybe the name has to change, too.
Well, not yet.
But not yet. We've got too much, you know, 35 years invested in that name. It's kind of hard to change it. It's a brand all to itself. Right.
Plus the website, nygasp.org, for people who want to find out what the company is doing. And I do want to tell everybody, for a little piece, not you can certainly please go to the Triad Theater for the next two shows that they're going to be doing of I've Got a Little Twist, but you can also catch two members of the New York Gilbert and Sullivan Players at the next Stage Buggy .com live coming up. It's not this week. I think it's the week after, unless I'm mistaken. Is it this week? I forgot to write that down. Do you know?
I'm not sure what that is.
Oh, it's this live
it's
show.
It's a wonderful new thing that's happening on the corner of 42nd and 8th Avenue.
Well, not the corner. It's actually in a building. It's in the Times Square Arts Center. I host a variety program, a talk show, live in front of an audience that's also videotaped. And we have Broadway people and cabaret people and musicians and stand-up comedians. And two of your people, David Wannan and David Auxier.
Okay, those are the two Davids, the Twin Towers that are involved with this cabaret at the moment. They were just on another show together. So David must have set that up.
Yeah.
David is my managing director, works with me full-time in the office as well as performing.
Oh, cool. So, yeah, so it was second, or even it was the press, it might have been Beck Lee, the press agent who
Cromedy, probably.
Well, excuse me, Peter Cromedy, right.
Yeah, that's it.
And so anyway, if people want to see it, go to my website, because I'm not sure whether it's this coming Saturday or next that the Gilbert and Sullivan folks are there. I think it's this coming Saturday. Check them out, David Wannan and David Auxier from New York Gilbert and Sullivan Players, and we're very happy to have had in the neighborhood tonight with us, with our little list, Albert Bergeret. Best of luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Of a modern major general, I've information vegetable, animal, and mineral. I know the kings of England, and I quote the facts historical from Marathon to Waterloo in order categorical. I am very well acquainted too with matters mathematical. I understand equations both the simple and quadratical. About my binomial theorem, I'm teeming with a lot of news. With many cheerful facts about the square of the hypotenuse. I am very good at integral and differential calculus. I know the scientific names of beans and animalculus. In short, it matters vegetable, animal, and mineral. I am the very model of a modern major general.
$15 an issue sounds like a lot to spend for a theater magazine, but what if every issue were jam-packed with information, like what shows are Broadway bound, what big stars are in town, and what shows on and off Broadway are worth seeing? What if there were calendars for dance, opera, and cabaret? What if every issue had more theater information than the New York Times, Variety, and The Hollywood Reporter put together? $15 sounds reasonable, right? But guess what? A full year of Performing Arts Insider costs less, and Dave's Gone By listeners get an extra 10% off the subscription price, meaning you pay just $12 an issue for all the listings, rumors, reviews. Call 516-295-1511, 516-295-1511, and ask about the theater magazine the professionals use and theatergoers love, Performing Arts Insider. Inside Broadway, brought to you by Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine and TogleTheater.com. Yes, we love going inside Broadway and also into opera houses and operetta houses. It's kind of a cultural show tonight on Dave's Gone By on this Sunday, January 11th.
Oh, yes, it is.
Yes, it is. So let's get through some quick Broadway theater news. Kind of, again, still in that unhappy time for Broadway. It usually is this time of year where a lot of things close and go away, but it's particularly burdensome this year because of the economy, and we're losing more things than we might have.
We're losing an unprecedented number of Tony Award-winning plays.
Like?
Today we lost Spamalot, which was a best musical, the best revival from last year, Gypsy,
wow.
And then one of the most popular revivals this year, All My Sons.
Well, yeah, which it was interesting. When that first opened, they were saying, well, Will Katie Holmes, who co-stars in it, sell tickets? And at first they were insuring, because here she is, this movie star. She's married to Tom Cruise. And all the pundits were saying, well, she's not moving the box office like we thought she would. But then reviews came out. She got pretty decent reviews, and she wasn't bad.
Well,
and
she's not playing a major, major character.
Not a major character, but she gets a nice bit of stage time. And so it's reason enough if you're interested in seeing her, and she is very cute on stage, and she sold a lot of tickets. The thing broke even and was making about $500,000 a week. So I didn't particularly like the production. I thought it was a little too artsy, and it just didn't hit me on any level, even though I like John Lithgow and almost anything he does. But, it closed. So did Spamalot. I thought Spamalot had another week to go, but I guess it closed closed today. And so that was a lot of fun. And Gypsy...
Although Spamalot, I was disappointed, honestly, with Spamalot.
Well, it wasn't another Monty Python on the Holy Grail.
Well, they left out some stuff, and but they did have a cow that was thrown at the audience, so that was very important.
And what else is...
Gypsy.
Yeah, Gypsy...
As a matter of fact, I heard that Arthur Lawrence and Stephen Sondheim both attended... this afternoon's performance.
I mean, it was a very good production.
Up on stage,
so well acted, and I'm a little shocked that, I mean, we knew that it would close when Patti LuPone's contract ended in March, but the fact that our economy is such that even with her still ready to be in there for another 2 months, it closed in January. That's kind of sad.
I think they moved it back twice, the closing date, didn't they?
Well, it was going to be sort of an open run, but they couldn't figure out anybody to replace Patti LuPone.
Well, let me tell you, I was sitting in the theater last night, and I heard people go through do you want to see these shows? And someone goes, who's in Gypsy now? It's like, who? It's like, that people don't even know it.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, let's, it's all bad news on this particular Inside Broadway, as a matter of fact. It's a question you hear about Sam Shepard. One of our more interesting American playwrights.
No, what happened?
Well, he was busted last week in Illinois for drunk driving.
Oh, that's right.
He went to
that.
A bar, had a few too many, and his blood alcohol was twice the legal limit, and he was going 16 miles over the speed limit, 16 miles per hour over the speed limit. So people are saying, well, he may have been researching a role in a film, and that's why he was in that bar in Illinois, because he doesn't live in Illinois. Maybe that's true, and maybe that's fine, but he still, you don't get in a car with a high blood alcohol level and drive. It's dangerous. So it's one thing when I don't like it when the media pries into celebrity marriages and divorces and their diets and their facelifts and shows their cottage cheesy buttocks on the covers of magazines. I mean, it's not, there's no reason for that stuff. But if a celebrity gets in a car and starts driving drunk, I think that is everybody's business, and I hope he's shamed out of doing that again. But I want to shame and encourage all of you listening to go to that show that we've been talking about, to StageBuddy.com's Weekly Night Live. It's a live show that I host every Saturday night at 6 o'clock at the Times Square Art Center over on 8th Avenue at 42nd Street. And it's a cabaret space. We have all these different kinds of performers, and also they come on stage and talk. This coming Saturday, the guests will be Mike Burstyn, whom you may remember from being on this show about a year or two ago. He's a Broadway actor and also part of a whole Yiddish theater legacy. And we will have those two members of the New York Gilbert and Sullivan Players that I mentioned. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Check it out this coming Saturday, the Stage Buddy Hour. And remember, tickets are only $5 to get in. And if you go to the StageBuddy.com website and become a member, which is free, it's free to get in. So kind of cool stuff all the way around. Well, also cool is Performing Arts Insider, which sponsors this particular segment of Dave's Gone By. So we're going to hear from them momentarily and then be back with some theater reviews. You don't have to pay big bucks on Broadway to enjoy a funny play. You could sit in the comfort of your living room, or bedroom, and read a whole book of hilarious comedies by the one and only me, Dave Lefkowitz. Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World, filled with my unique humor, satire, and spoofery. If you like my show, you'll love my book. $20 hardcover, $12 soft. Buy it at davesgoneby.org. Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World. That says it all, doesn't it? But give it to me every hour.
worry, girls, I'm only on vacation, not out of circulation. Don't worry, girls, don't worry, girls, while I still have my eyesight, you're going to be in my sight. Don't worry, girls, you never can erase the hunter from the chase. Sound the happy hunting horn, there's new game on the trail now. We're hunting for quail now, happy little hunting horn. Play the horn, but don't play corn, the music must be nice now. We're hunting for mice now, happy little hunting horn. Danger's easy to endure when you're out to catch a butte. By an ambush, but be sure when you see the whites of their eyes, don't shoot. Play the horn from night till morn, just play no matter what time. Play, there'll be a hot time, happy little hunt, ting horn.
Little taste there from the original production of Pal Joey. It's getting a long-awaited revival. Hasn't been on Broadway for a long, long time. The Roundabout Theater is doing it at Studio 54 through March 1st, and all we had heard building up to Pal Joey when it was supposed to be opening was bad news. All we heard was that the guy who was originally supposed to play Joey, who was an actor who was so fine in Jersey Boys, he was actually Tony Award winner for Jersey Boys, was going to be Joey, and people were excited about it, and then he quote-unquote hurt his foot. Hurt it so badly, and it is a dancing role, that he couldn't go on and go forward and do it. Now, whether that he really hurt it so bad, or just the producers weren't quite so happy with his charisma and his ability to do the role, so they used that as an excuse to kind of pay him off and get the understudy in, well, that'll be for the fates and, I guess, the courts to decide.
We'll never know.
Well, we'll probably know eventually, so one of these years when we read memoirs about it. But Matthew Risch came up from the ranks. He was the understudy, and they made him Joey. And he does a very, very good job. I mean, it's this story of a guy. It's based on stories by John O'Hara, and he's not a particularly nice fella, but he's not a bad man either. I think he gets kind of a bad rap in some ways. He's a user. He's a guy, he's a cad with women, and he likes women a lot, and, you know, uses them for what he can get out of them, but that's really the worst thing that he does, but he does it all the time, and he uses it to get himself a nightclub, but also while going after a quote-unquote nice girl, whom he's also dating, or wants to date, or did date, and then kind of ignores, because he's living off the largesse of another woman who's keeping him. So that's the story of it, and Matthew Risch, he's kind of a triple threat. He can sing, he can dance, he can act. He perhaps lacks the charm that would totally make us believe that this guy had all women right in his pocket. But he's good enough, and he certainly is an intense actor, he's a very good dancer, and at first his singing is worrisome, but his voice even gets better as the night goes on. So he's good, and let me tell you, the three women in this production of Pal Joey are all terrific in their own ways. You've got Stockard Channing, whom you would never think of as much of a singer, but what she does to Bewitched, Bothered, and Bewildered is a consummate piece of theater musical acting. She acts the hell out of that song. It's not just a pretty tune by this older woman who's just falling in love again. She mines every word for every nuance of what it really means for this married, incredibly bored lady to find love again, but also realize that it's not really love. It's just this infatuation that can only go on for a little while, and that there's really nothing else to it except all that she's pouring into it. It's a fabulous scene, and she's great throughout. Martha Plimpton, who's proving to be one of our most resilient and interesting theater actresses. She plays, her character's Gladys. She's an ex-squeeze of Joey. She's still staying on at the nightclub, and she's basically stuck there, and she's happy to have the job, because there aren't a lot of jobs for that kind of thing, especially a woman who's now past, you know, a certain age when she's not an ingenue anymore. So she's a little desperate, and she minds that character beautifully, and she does her songs. She's got a voice She can really pull out a theater song and do it. And she does terrifically by Zip, which is a number that we associate with.
Oh.
Stritch.
Right.
Elaine Stritch.
That's right.
Plimpton will not make you think of Stritch. She does it superbly. And then you've got the other actress is Jenny Fellner, and she plays the nice girl, who isn't quite so nice. She knows what she's getting into when she starts dating Joey and allows him into her life. And the thing, you know, people are complaining that this pal Joey might be a little dark and it's not flashy. And like most Roundabout-produced musicals, it isn't all that pretty to look at. They could have thrown a little more money into the scenery on certain scenes. But Joe Mantello is directing, and what he gives us is a drama with music. Not just a musical, quote-unquote. He gives us the story. He gives us the people. And that's what really makes it work. I'm not saying this is the most bewitching musical. But it is absorbing, and I would definitely recommend going to see Pal Joey at Studio 54. I would also recommend, if I could recommend it, except it just closed, because I'm sorry for only getting to it now, but I want to give a shout-out to the Signature Theater Company, which has been devoting its entire season to works that made famous by the Negro Ensemble Company. And they did a very good production of First Breeze of Summer a couple of months ago, and now they're doing the most famous play by Sam Art Williams. It's a comedy drama called Home that I never got to see before, and I'm so glad I saw now. When it first starts, you feel, oh no, it's going to be one of these overly poetic things, and everything is narrated, and nothing's really acted out. And so the first 10 minutes, I'm sitting there like, oh boy, yeah, I hope there's an intermission, da-da-da-da. But then the story does kick in, and it's a very, it's an epic story in a way of this man who has this land and this home and this family, a black man, during, you know, the middle part of the century. And then all the things that pull him away. Have you seen the
I saw the original production on Broadway.
Was it wonderful?
It was very good.
I mean, it really gets to you.
It's very moving.
Yes. Those last 5 minutes, I was just shocked at how gripping and powerful they were. You can't see it, so I won't give it away. But even though, yes, it's kind of a hard-to-believe twist, it works. And you just feel so strongly for these people. And it's a really well-done production. They're not going to bring it back, but I'm very glad that I got to see it, and thanks Signature Theater for bringing this play back.
And if anyone else decides to revive it, even a smaller company, I think, can do Home.
Totally, it's a 3-person play.
Because, well, not just that, but it's not really the talent that gets it. It's just so well written.
Yeah,
and the verbiage.
No, but you also need good actors to do it because they're playing many roles. The lead actor is doing one role, Cephas, the guy who goes through all this. But there's two women, and they're playing all these characters. They're also making their sound effects through their voices. It's pure theater in a way. All I can say
okay,
is
okay. But I just think
it's a special piece.
As I remember it, it was just a show that could be done by almost anyone.
Well, anyone black. Well, it would help if they're black. That's important.
It doesn't necessarily have to be. But it's more poignant because they're black.
Yeah, well, and it's also the whole key
time
story.
And everything
yeah.
is, you know. But if you move it to different times and different locations, it's a pretty universal piece.
True. Well, yeah, it's the story of a person pulled away from his home and then pulled back. That's the basic essence of it, and quite lovely.
It's kind of like Passing Strange.
Or I think of Sullivan's Travels, that old Preston Sturges movie, in a way where everything's happy and light, and then he gets pulled into real horrors, and he discovers what he was really missing. So, and this is deeper than that. This really is neat.
It's a very good play.
Well, glad to have two good reviews on this edition of Inside Broadway. We'll be right back to wrap up Dave's Gone By. We've just been Inside Broadway, thanks to TotalTheater.com and Performing Arts Insider. Shalom, damn it, shalom, damn it, that's the name of my TV show. Twice a week on Cablevision, here is what you need to know. See the one and only Rabbi Saul Solomon on TV, Wednesday mornings at 8 on Channel 115, Friday mornings at 4:30 on Channel 20, in New York City, 1:30 Sunday afternoons on Channel 67, or watch every show anytime on YouTube. See all the info at shalomdammit.com. I read the Torah, I tell stories, shake my fist and don't complain a bit. Cable vision, MNN YouTube, watch me on Shalom, damn it, damn it. One of the great classic punk numbers of both pre-punk, proto-punk numbers, I Want to Be Your Dog, Iggy and the Stooges. Reason I'm playing that, besides it being a great song, is that we lost the lead guitarist on that number this week. Ron Ashton, who was born July 17, 1948, died this past Tuesday on June 6, 2009. He was found dead of a heart attack.
Tuesday was June 6th?
Excuse me, did I say June? I meant January. January 6, 2009. Found dead of a heart attack. He was a guitarist, also co-vocalist, and co-songwriter for the Stooges. He then went on to work with other bands like Destroy All Monsters, can't say I've ever heard of them, and also The New Order, not to be confused with New Order, which was the post-Joy Division band, and on the soundtrack of a movie called Gods and Monsters. He was ranked number 29 on Rolling Stone's list of greatest all-time guitarists, and if for no other reason than he's the co-writer and the guitarist on that song from 1969 on the first Stooges album. The distortion, the jagged, relentless pounding of that song with Iggy singing, Dave Alexander on the bass, Scott Ashton, his brother, on the drums, and pounding that pound was actually John Cale. I didn't remember that. So farewell to Ron Ashton and his contribution, lasting contribution to rock and roll. Well, our contribution is almost over to radio tonight. It's 12:05 on this fine station, which is
WGBB Freeport.
That's right. So gospel will be coming in just a few minutes to play gospel music all night until 6 a.m. But before that happens, we have to say our goodbyes and do our usual farewells and let you know stuff about the show. Like, if you want to tell me what you thought of the show, please email me at davesgongby@aol.com. That's D-A-V as in Victor, davesgongby@aol.com.
Oh, Dave.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can I tell you what I thought of the show?
What did you think of the show?
You don't want to know.
What? We had a wonderful guest. We had Albert Bergeret talking about the Gilbert and Sullivan Players. And me talking about Pal Joey and talking about all about Broadway stuff. And then we played a really cool song. What?
And yet Home.
And we talked about Home, which we could both talk about because you saw the original production. I mean, it was a very, very nice show.
So okay, you've changed my mind. It's a fantabulous show we had.
I thought so.
Number 200, 302. 302.
Number 302 tonight.
Was fantabulous.
To find out more about all the episodes that we've done and to listen to bunches and bunches of them, remember, you can go to davesgoneby.org. D-A-V as in Victor, davesgoneby.org. Now let's thank our sponsors once again real quick. Thank you to Fancy...
The Woodrow Delicatessen.
Open 7 days a week. Such delicious food. They have pastrami, salami, all the different cold cuts, turkey, chicken. They do about six different types of chicken. Everything from Polynesian chicken with dipping sauce to fried chicken to barbecued to they do a veal cutlet. They do liver and onions.
Do they do a nice chicken Milanese?
Is that have cream in it? That probably I don't think they can do. That's the one. You would pick the one thing that they probably don't do. But they got frankfurters. They got hamburgers, of course, and chopped meat, big old plates.
How are their
them.
Fries?
Their fries are really good. They have derma. They have onion rings. They've got
and they got
fried
pickles.
Rice. Oh, pickles are. I mean, they just toss pickles at you. You get bread on the table. You get coleslaw, sauerkraut. They even have parva desserts. And parv meaning that they're not made with milk, so they can have them next to the meat. And they're good, like layer cakes and stuff. Go to the Woodrow Deli in the Peninsula Shopping Center on in Hewlett, Long Island, right on Peninsula Boulevard. Also, go to Hewlett Minuteman Press, the copy Kings of Broadway for about three decades now. The Torong family has run Hewlett Minuteman Press, and Dave's Gone By listeners get
10% off
any job.
And you know where it's located?
Where?
Next to the defunct Loman Shoes.
I know. I can't even play the Minuteman song anymore. Well, I can, but one of the lines in the song is next to the new Loman Shoe store. And it's not anymore. Next to the dead, I have to put in the word like defunct Loman Shoe store. Just do an insert edit for that.
Defunct. But next to the defunct Loman Shoe store.
Right. But it's still across the street from regular Loman. So go to Hewlett Minuteman Press on Broadway in Hewlett. 569-5577 is their number. And please subscribe to Performing Arts Insider Theater Journal. They're 66 years old, and they're better than ever. They've changed the covers now.
They're like
color.
Past retirement.
Well, what, sorry?
Past retirement.
That's right. It should apply for AARP at this point. But it's young and fresh and gives you all fresh information on every show, playing on, off-Broadway, off-off-Broadway, cabaret, opera, dance, special events, and awards, like they just announced this week when a lot of the Tony Award stuff, like when the nominees will come out and when the nominees
launch. You think that'll be in the Performing Arts Insider?
It will be in the next issue, that's for sure. They list that kind of stuff. They list everything. It's your one-stop theater
will
guide.
Will they announce all the plays that are coming to Broadway?
Every time, every issue, that's what they do. Performing Arts Insider, the Bible of Broadway. Go to performingartsinsider.com and make sure you check davesgoneby.org for the great discount that our listeners get if you subscribe to Performing Arts Insider. And brought to you by, Fancy Schmancy Balloons.
How could we forget that?
And tell us just a little bit about them.
I don't want
to. Okay. I'll tell them. It's the place to decorate your party in a really nice way. 516-797-3229. 797-3229. Everybody also go to TotalTheater.com for over 2,000 theater reviews there from all over the world. Bunches and bunches of feature stories, too. This is a really cool website that you should check out if you're interested in theater, old and new. TotalTheater.com. And a reminder once more to come to the StageBuddy.com weekly night live show every Saturday at 6 at the Times Square Art Center. I'm the MC, so come see me. And as I said, this coming week, a couple of people from Gilbert and Sullivan will be there and actor Mike Burstyn, and we'll also do a Critics Corner as well.
I think you have very neat gifts.
Well, yeah, if you participate in our quiz, if we have time for a quiz, we do that, and we get these really kitschy gifts to give out.
Like
to
a jumbo
winner.
Calculator.
That woman was amazing last night. Jeff was there as participating in last night's show. And was I mean to her, or was I tolerant?
No, you were tolerant. I mean, you were good. You interacted well with her.
Thanks, because I was asking her questions. She should have gotten 4 out of 6, I think. 2 were tough.
Well, she didn't. I gave her the answer to two of them.
Yeah, you know, there was one question where Hans Christian Andersen was the answer.
She still doesn't even know. I kept pointing. I said, hands.
And then you went H.C.
I mean, well, but she didn't. She said hands, and I still don't know if she knows who it is. She thinks there's someone named H-A-N-D-S.
Oh, because when she said hands, I thought, oh, my God, she got it. And I didn't realize looking at your hands. Oh,
no,
Lord.
I was pointing. D.C. and I were pointing at our hands.
Oh, Lord. Oh, gosh. And the funniest part was when
that's
we first...
That's why she said she has hands. And you went, right!
I didn't realize... Oh, God. She shouldn't have gotten the prize. I mean, the first question, I was standing so close to her that she saw on my answer sheet what the first answer was. And she still got it wrong.
But she read it wrong.
All the answers were Andersen. That was the quiz. It was people who were named Andersen, and you had to pick the first name. So she got a glimpse of my sheet inadvertently. It wasn't like she was trying to spy, and she confessed as much. So that was nice of her. So I gave her the first question, but I said, "So, you know, what's the first answer?" And she's like, "Louis Armstrong." I'm like, "No, all the answers are people named Andersen."
No, you didn't. Actually, you didn't do it that way.
Oh, okay.
It was a little more confusing than that.
I thought it was pretty.
After a while, you said that.
Oh, after, yeah, because I had to. Well, anyway, it was a fun night, and I thank Jeff for participating.
It was actually very funny. That was probably the highlight of the whole night was her wonderful interaction with you.
Well, yeah, it was fun. It was fun. But you were also a highlight, and Charlie Gross was a highlight. I thank you both.
Oh, I was no highlight.
No, you were fine. You were fun with the whole Price is Right. That was very cool.
Yeah. We didn't get to talk any theater.
Not much. Well, a little bit, but not enough. Well, you guys will have to come back in a couple of months, and we'll do it again.
When it's not sleeting and hailing and snowing and having an ice storm outside. Thanks for inviting me on all the worst weather shows.
True. Well, yeah. Well, I can get good guests for good weather. So you're in reserve there. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Oh, by the way, Dave, guess who's walking home?
Yeah.
Without a bicycle.
Right. Oh, that's right, because it's in your truck. I want to remind everybody that David Bromberg, who was a guest on this program a couple of months ago, well, maybe about a year and a half ago, he's going to be back playing live in New York on February 4th at B.B. King's Blues Club. He's a master guitarist and a really good songwriter, too. So I'm sorry?
How's he at bathing?
Bathing?
Baiting.
I don't get it. Oh, no, stop that. Don't even go there. David Bromberg, he's a legend. He's a folk legend, and he was on this show. So give him a big shout out.
I'd play the old joke.
B.B. King's. Also, let's thank the people who appear tonight. Albert Bergeret of the New York Gilbert and Sullivan Players.
He was wonderful. Love Albert.
Go see I've Got a Little Twist at the Triad next Sunday at 5:30. I also want to thank Peter Cromartie for setting up that interview tonight and also for getting us those...
One of our favorite little press agents.
Peter's very cool. I want to thank Mom and Dad. Love them very much. Dad, I owe you a phone call. I'll call you tomorrow. I just haven't had a chance the last couple of days to give you a buzz.
I'd like to thank Joyce for last night, and she knows what that means.
Oh, well, yes. Yes, she does. And she's walking bow-legged, which is really kind of surprising. And thank you to my beloved wife, Joyce. I'll thank her on my own with all my love and all my heart.
You have to wait till the pain subsides.
She's so kind because, she's only in town a couple of weeks before she has to go back to school and live in Philadelphia half the week. So she's making her business to come to my show.
You don't mention Philadelphia today, remember?
Oh, well, yes. Jeff's upset about Philadelphia because of the Eagles. I'll say it's the P word. We won't say the P word tonight because Jeff is grieving for the Giants. And thank you to Jeff Goodman so much for being with me and for doing this show with me pretty much every week. I really, really do appreciate that.
Oh.
And it's kind of, these are the tough, darkish times now for sports fans and for all New York because the holidays are over, right?
They see there's nothing to do, so they have to stay up and listen to Dave's Gone By.
That's right. Yeah, you know, I mean, you've got a couple of playoff games, and you come, I think someone might be at the door. The door should be open, but maybe it's not. Yeah, it's open. That's good. The gospel people are coming in, so that's great. So you've got the gospel music coming. So we're going to wrap up the show. Jeff, come on, sit down. Help me wrap up the show, because it's time to leave the neighborhood. But we will be back soon. In fact, hopefully we'll be back next Sunday night, January 18th, 2009.
The high of January.
Right. For the
first high of 2009.
Yeah. And it'll be a very lively one because we'll have a new president coming in right after that.
Oh, thank
Better
God.
Times ahead, I hope. It'll be a good time because it'll be the 303rd episode of Dave's Gone By. So until then, don't miss your Dave's or days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz.
And Jeff Goodman.
Wishing you good night to all you yeomen, gondoliers, patient pirates, and merry Mikados.
And gone by.